Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
An Erio's original.
I invented a word that I really want to get in the dictionary, and it's called distimacy. And because I feel like I have a real, I can have an intimacy at a distance.
Right. So we would do like this internet dating like roulette where we would have like, we would turn on our locations and just like try to find weird dudes. Just like, okay, we're going to fuck this guy.
Sounds great.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today, we have a star and a great actress. She is Stevie on the amazing show Schitt's Creek. It's Emily Hampshire.
Coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark.
When did you start exactly? So you've been a child, you were a child actor.
I started at 12. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't like a child actor like it is in the States, here we're in the States. I wasn't on a TV show, a regular TV show. I just was like a working actor. I started on Are You Afraid of the Dark? And I played like two, girlfriend number one, and then the next year I played girlfriend number two. So that's kind of going backwards. But I just kind of worked my way up. I did episodic stuff, and then I got my first movie. And then I did do a series in Canada for 3 years when I was, I think, like 20. I feel really fortunate that my career took that trajectory and not the one I wanted at the time, which was instant success. Like I wanted, by 16, I thought, oh my God, I'm a failure. I haven't like done a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. But I'm so glad now that I had all that time to like learn my craft, learn about like failure and what it is like when you know, like I went to Cannes with a movie and it was supposed to be the biggest thing ever. And then like, it didn't become that. And those are lessons that I think you can't like are invaluable.
It always feels like disappointment at the time, but then you realize, oh, it's good the way that it happened. You know, like I think, success very young, it's not necessarily the best thing for people. And, you know, you see it all the time. Like when people are really successful, when they're super young, it's hard on them. It's really hard on them.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's in music told me, he like represents musicians and stuff. And he said that there's a saying that the age at which someone, at least he was saying in the music industry, gets famous is where they stay, mentally at that age. And it's kind of interesting, like Michael Jackson was famous as a kid and kind of stayed that way. And like, and it makes sense to me because everyone starts to treat you like differently and like you're, well, tiptoe around you and stuff. And if you don't have that kind of good sense of self at 10, you're kind of screwed.
Right. It's hard. It's really hard. I think it's definitely like, you know, something, or if you're used to really big success when you're that young, then everything that you do, you compare to that, you know?
Yeah, it's all downhill after that. And that's oh, so bad.
It feels bad and weird, but it's definitely like something, it's interesting to like kind of look and how, also for me, it's just like how show business has changed and how things play out. But I've definitely noticed like how like everybody who really just stays in it, eventually it comes around to them.
I think so too. And I do believe in like the cream rises. I think if you stick at it and you're really good at what you do, I think you will be, I kind of hate the word discovered, because usually people think like they're, people are overnight successes when they've been working at it forever. But I believe that like great talent will, people notice.
Yes. So what do you think about like what kind of things you want to do, like in terms of roles, like what kind of like, do you want to do like movies now and TV? I mean, Schitt's Creek is such a great like jumping off point to do so many things, because the show is so funny, but it also had so much heart too, you know, because you got to do so much and so much diversity and working with the Levies, such great.
And Catherine O'Hara,
the best.
Chris Elliott.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The best comedians, but there's so much depth there too. I have a long love of Eugene Levy. There was many years ago, there was a People magazine thing of the sexiest man alive issue, and they had me write an article for it, and it was about, supposed to be about Orlando Bloom. And I wrote it about how much hotter Eugene Levy is than Orlando Bloom.
Oh my God, I
like,
love that.
This whole thing
That's
about
amazing.
How like I think like Eugene Levy has so much more to offer than a night out with Orlando Bloom. But I think that that's actually true. Like, I think that the Levies are super hot as a family.
Oh, yeah. And
so
even,
funny and sexy.
Yeah, his wife Deb's hot too. And she's like the funniest one in the family and isn't in the business. She's
so great.
And Sarah Levy, his sister's on the show, and she's
the
amazing.
Best. She's, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, it's funny. It was hard when Schitt's ended because I actually feel like I got to do everything in the past 6 years, because at the same time as I was doing Schitt's, I was doing another show called 12 Monkeys. And that was, it's based on, I don't know if you've seen the movie, but I played the Brad Pitt part in it. And it's a totally different genre, character, everything than Schitt's Creek. So for those years, I was going from Stevie with like on a great comedy with the greatest comedians. And then I'd go and do this hour-long kind of sci-fi drama where I got to play this crazy person who did everything. And so both of them ended. It was also one of those weird things where near the end, they ended up shooting at the same time. So I would shoot Schitt's during the day and then 12 Monkeys at night. And I was on this like wheel of just constantly working. And then for everything to stop was very scary to me. But then I started to think of like, what do I want to do next? Because as an actor, I usually am, at least to the position I was in before, was like whatever anyone will give me, or like whatever I can get. And now I felt kind of like I was in a position to make, have more choice. And that to me is ultimate success. Like my dream success thing is to have choice, to be able to choose what I want to do. And so it was hard to find one project that would satisfy both those things, because I'll never get to do like two shows at the same time again and have comedy and drama and all that stuff. I realized the kind of dream thing is doing my own show and kind of taking a cue from Dan, and I watched him for 6 years really grow into this showrunner, creator, actor. And I realized I love doing that. So I'm actually doing my own show. It's not announced yet, so I can't talk about it. But when I can, I'll tell you.
That's great. That's really great. Because, I mean, I think that's smart. Because I think, I mean, television is so interesting now. And it's like right now is the perfect time to kind of figure out what that dream project is. Because it's a perfect thing to like launch that thing, because there's like so much space to do it, and there's so many different places to do something like that, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I just want too much though, and maybe that's why I also became an actor, is like I want to, you know, play a doctor. I never want to play a doctor. That's why I play something and then have this other life and then play this. Like, I want to live like all these lives. And so I feel like, when you've kind of come to choosing what you want to do, nothing's enough for me, which sounds terrible.
No, but that's
it's
good.
Just like, I want to do, it's not that it's not enough. It's that I want to do all of it and I can't do all of it at the same time. So the idea to like make a decision and cut off other things, very difficult.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, yeah. I know. I think it's great though. That then it's like, then it's all sort of, but then it's just like the possibilities are infinite. So that's great. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what makes it so exciting and so fun. Are there shows that right now that you're like super excited about or into, like obsessed with? Is there anything that you're binging that you're like, oh, I love?
Well, what's weird is, so I don't watch any television except for Forensic Files, Dateline, and murder documentaries.
Ooh.
And just all documentaries. However, a friend of mine was like, I want to watch, you should see this new show, Dave. And it's on FX, and I binged it, and I've actually never binged a show. Like, I know everyone does that. I feel like if I'm not learning something, and I'll watch TV if I need to watch that show for a reason. And I know there's so many shows I know I should watch and want to watch. Like, mm-hmm. People are always telling me Succession, I would love, and Insecure. I know all these shows that I would love. But I just feel like I'm being lazy if I'm watching. But anyways, I watched Dave and I couldn't. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Oh, that's good.
So,
I have to check it out. Yeah. I haven't watched it. A good documentary that I watched was The Keepers on Netflix.
Oh my God. I've seen it. I'm the only person who's watched The Keepers twice.
Oh my God.
It's not really a rewatch, but I've seen it twice.
That one is crazy. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe that one. And I couldn't believe Abducted in Plain Sight.
I was going to say, if you thought The Keepers was something, watch Abducted in Plain Sight, because that one blew my
that
mind.
That one blew my mind. That one was like, wait, what?
Yeah, you think it's this normal, like, kind of Dateline-ish documentary about a missing girl, and then you find out this guy's like, I don't know what kind of show your podcast is in terms of language and stuff. But
no, you could say whatever.
It's serious.
No, those kinds of things, it's weird, but I really like get into any kind of true crime sort of Dateline Forensic Files thing, because it's the one time, and this sounds really morbid, but it's the one time that I can relax, because I have such a morbid sense of life, or I have like a really negative frame of mind. So obviously something terrible is going to happen all the time. So like when I watch or listen to true crime, I can relax because all the bad stuff has happened, or it's already happened.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, thank God. So the onus is not on me to create it in my mind, because the terrible things have already occurred, and I can sort of disseminate like exactly why it happened, or I can like, I don't know, forensically pull it out or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're not like creating the negativity. Someone's doing it for you. But are you like a, you would say, glass half empty person?
I think so. And I'm trying to try to stop being that way, like trying to stop being so negative as a person. So I wish that like I want to change that about myself. But I definitely, that's why I love I like horror movies. I like any kind of true crime, like podcast kind of thing. I like kind of like a murder documentary, crime documentary, because I'm just an inherently like negative, bloody thinker. Like it's a nasty, nasty kind of thing. Like I just like bad, nasty, negative details. And it's just a really gross thing. But
well, see, I don't know if that's so nasty, because I'm trying to think of like, I feel like during this whole quarantine and COVID and everything, the world ending, I feel like I've discovered that I am such a like silver linings person, which I didn't think I was. Because my sense of humor is usually very dark and inappropriate, or never in a mean way, in just a like dark way. And the first things I think of are always, like you said, like gross and bloody and dirt, like just all that. But I can't believe how much I really have learned that, like, during this time, I when I'm aware that there's so much bad, I can only see the good in it, and that which is weird because I'll watch like a murder documentary and I empathize with the murderer, which is like, that's a problem. But I feel like I can understand why certain, like how somebody got somewhere and feel bad for them. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's getting older.
Or yeah, you can see the different sides of something, or you can definitely pull apart why something happened, or you can understand. I understand like all sides of it, you know, like I can definitely see where people are suffering and where, you know, like the victim side of it and the perpetrator side of it. And it's just a very, but it's a weird kind of thing. Like I do feel very relaxed when I can watch something kind of like sort of violent. It's weird. Thing. Like I definitely feel like this sort of tension release, and I feel like that's what people do watch horror things or like crime things in order to sort of feel relaxed.
Yeah. Oh, I've definitely heard that, and there's like a science with that too, that it like releases this like adrenaline, and then after there's other neurochemicals that like go down your brain. It's funny though, I remember remarking when I saw the George Floyd video, I remember one of the things I thought was, I don't understand what this man was thinking who was doing that. Like how, and I only say that because normally I can, at the most horrible things, normally I can be like, oh, he's a narcissist and always obsessed with this, and that's why he's doing this and this and that. I can understand like that there is just racism, but that just putting his knee for that long on that, I didn't understand what was going through that man's head, and that really freaked me out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because have you seen Don't Fuck with Cats?
Oh God, that one is so, that one is really upsetting. I mean, I knew about that story anyway. That one is, I think what's so interesting about that, I really wanted that body moving and that guy to get together at the end. You know, the two Facebook people?
Oh yeah.
I was like, hoping that they would get together then. But they didn't get together. But that, but yeah, that whole story is like so crazy, and that guy is so stupid. I mean, it just is like so like. But that was an interesting that whole thing that was like all the people getting together to find out who the guy was, which, you know, Luca Magnotta. It just was. It's very interesting.
Yeah, but I remember with that like the thing he was doing with the kittens, that was another thing where that reminded me of that George Floyd thing, that at a certain point you are doing something to someone,
doesn't make any sense,
and you don't have, it's not like you seem powerful doing this, it's horrible.
No.
I just don't, there's that, but then like other murders, I'm totally cool. I'm not.
But there was
cool
like a lack of humanity. Yeah. That there's sort of like a disconnection of like humanity, and then it's almost like a robotic thing takes over. It's like you don't even know what you're doing or something. There's like something like what they're not aware, or they're not conscious, or they don't care, or something. It's like a very strange thing.
You're right. It is that disconnect, and that's the thing that really confuses me when I can't put it together. That bothers me, and it is that exact thing, like just they're gone and they don't have any kind of human. Oh,
it's really scary. That's what really scares me about police brutality, is that there seems to be this machine that takes over where it's almost like a switch, and then they can't go back. And there's something that seems to occur. That's why they can't, even after all of this news coverage about it and the amping up of this awareness around it, it still doesn't seem to recede. There seems to be more and more of it being reported. It seems like now, don't you understand, like we should stop killing black people. They're not stopping. you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a, it's like almost like they can't stop. They can't turn it off.
It is interesting, the like, kind of, I wonder if it's like there's a military mindset in that gets pumped into you when you go through police academy or something. I don't know. I've never been through. I'm always curious. I'm always like, how do you just also be programmed, not taking anyone's free will away, but like for two people or many people to watch someone do something that is horrific to someone else and feel like your job is to stand by and let this happen.
It's a strange thing, but the Don't Fuck with Cats was interesting because it was that thing of like people getting together online to somehow stop it. And it was really about like violence against cats that made people so crazy, which I was like, that's such a great thing. That was like, that got people so upset. You know?
Yeah.
That was really
cool. Well, I think
cool.
I think that's what kind of was such the hook with this is that no one, I think, can stomach someone doing anything to a kitten. Mm-hmm. Or I think we're kind of desensitized a bit to murder and like horrific kind of violent crimes. But when you think of that kind of thing to a kitten or someone like George Floyd, who was helpless, completely helpless at a certain point, and to continue, that's a sick something. But I mean, I don't want to keep, I'm not comparing George Floyd to a kitten at all.
No, but I think what it is also that, like, it's like technology has given us the ability to be confronted with our own violence, which I think, you know, many centuries of us sort of retelling stories of this kind of stuff happening, but the actual physical proof of it happening now we can't deny, which is, I think, really important. So maybe this is the beginning of this kind of stuff not happening, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people were saying this is one that got caught on tape. Like, there's so many that have
so
it.
Many.
And, like, that's the scary thing. That's really scary.
Yeah, it's important. It's important and it's good. And it's the beginning of something. And I think that, you know, it did take the pandemic to really make everybody sit down and watch and actually take a moment. And, you know, in this, it's Pride, it's 50 years of gay pride. And, you know, it's like we're sitting and, you know, watching the world change. And it's a very, I mean, I miss being out for the big gay pride crowd. Are you a pride person? Do you like to go out for the pride parades?
I'm not a crowd person at all. Like, I think I'm the only person in the world who would say they hate live music. But I only hate it because of the, like, if I'm at the Hollywood Bowl in a little box or something, I love it. But so I'm not a crowd person. However, in Toronto, the cast of Schitt's Creek led the pride parade in, I think it was 2017, and that was such an amazing experience. It was my first pride parade that I'd been to. Oh, I'm only a crowd person if I have a special diva ticket, but I love watching it. I love
it's
watching
fun.
All that. Yeah.
I've really
thrived in quarantine and doing all these kind of celebrations in quarantine, which everybody's mostly disappointed with, but I, like, we had our Canadian Screen Awards, which are kind of like Canadian Emmys, and we had the award show online, and then we got to do our, like, acceptance speeches, film them and submit them. Like, I love that distance. Mm-hmm. I invented a word that I really want to get in the dictionary, and it's called distimacy. And because I feel like I can have an intimacy at a distance, but the minute I'm in it, I feel like I can't be as forthcoming and open and all that.
I think that's a really good word. I think that's really actually a true, though, because there is a kind of form of intimacy that occurs over Skype and Zoom that I've been able to achieve, too. There's a kind of intimacy that occurs because we have to forge a closeness this way. We're forced to.
Yeah. And sometimes I always feel something that I wouldn't otherwise have. Like, it's like that word came to me when first social media started and people started really like DMing each other, and you'd have these relationships. If you were dating and stuff, you'd start your relationship via text. It felt like you could be say things you'd never say to someone in person. And I feel like that now in quarantine. I'm actually, my friends are like, I'm seeing you more now than I ever have, like with FaceTime and Zoom, when I'm not really someone who would go and hang out for no reason or, yeah.
I think it's nice. No, I agree. I think it's a place, like a space where we can be together and alone, and that it inspires more of a wholeness and a togetherness, you know, like that place where we can mm-hmm. intersect, but in a way that we're not enmeshed.
Yes, I think my fear is a meshing. I had a whole therapy session about a meshing this morning. Yeah, I definitely am a loner a bit. Like all my elementary school report cards were like, Emily plays well alone.
Yeah, but it's like when we can connect alone, but connect also still.
Yeah, that feels safe.
It's an admirable skill that we'll be able to use when this is all over too.
Yeah. Oh God, it's gonna. Have you been to like a restaurant or anything?
No, but I did have dinner with I'm dating somebody who I started dating at the beginning of was before the pandemic. So he's been sort of my only quarantine partner, which has been really, we really flourished in it because.
Yeah, love in the time of Corona.
Which
it's a thing.
Been very beautiful. And I think that we've grown very close in it because we've sort of only had this space. So that's been very,
yeah,
very beautiful. And then, but I really would love to go to a restaurant because I'm a really bad cook. So
yeah, I'm
terrible.
I can't cook at all. In fact, I have this video I put on Instagram of me cooking because I cooked scrambled eggs for the first time. And people said that I should have a cooking show of like the worst cook of all time. Because, yeah, I was really trying though. Like I was really trying.
Well, the trick with scrambled eggs is you just have to cook them really, really slowly. I mean, it's like it just... barely heating the pan, like barely, it takes a long time, like 25 minutes.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't have that kind of time.
I know.
The only reason I cook eggs instead of order them from Postmates is because Postmates is taking too long.
I know. So. It's a very long process. I mean, I'm the worst.
Whoa.
So hopefully a restaurant someday.
Yeah, I went to a restaurant and it was so... It's interesting. I mean, obviously, it is fascinating to be living in this time, like experiencing all this that it's like a movie, a sci-fi movie that like, did we ever think we would be sitting down at a restaurant with people with these like hazmat suit kind of masks and then giving your cutlery with tongs? And it's amazing.
Well, hopefully we will be able to watch from afar together at some point. We'll go to a restaurant and we'll laugh at this in the future someday.
Yes, I'm curious to know what the future look back on this will be like.
We will be laughing someday, hopefully. Where can people find you on the internets so they can be a fan from afar? From your podcast on, where can they find you?
Well, I don't have a podcast, but they can come to this podcast and hear me on here. But I'm on Instagram a lot. That's kind of, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, but I don't really go there. Instagram is my jam, but
not your podcast. I did your show, and it's not a podcast.
It's all the same kind of. Because podcasts used to be that you didn't. It was just voice, but you can watch a podcast.
It's a show, yeah.
So, yeah, I have this show called Hump Day with Hampshire for charity for the Actors Fund, which is not just for actors. It's for, like, everyone in the entertainment industry, from ushers to PAs to drag queens, hair and makeup people, like, who lost their jobs due to COVID. And so we've been doing this every week. I thought it would be, like, 3 weeks max. We've done Pretty much like two seasons of Fleabag now. We've done like 10 episodes. And our finale is this Wednesday. And our guests are insane. We have the Dixie Chicks. We have Catherine O'Hara.
Wow.
We have, my God, we have a returning guest, Adam Rippon, and Debbie Gibson, and Annette Bening. It's like insane.
So exciting.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so this Wednesday on the Actors Fund YouTube channel.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad
Thanks
we got to do this.
Me.
Thank
me
you.
Too.
You're awesome.
Nice to like have a mid-afternoon chat.
I know. I love it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Today we have the great musician. She's in a band with me. She's also in a band called The Dirty Ghosts. She's in a lot of bands. It's Allison Baker. We are in a band together called The Red Room Orchestra. Yes, I'm in a band. I'm in a band with her, but she's in a lot of bands. And we talked to her about her new single, Strange Weather, and a lot of other stuff. Enjoy, Allison Baker. We did a show in January at Sketchfest with our band, the Red Room Orchestra, which was really fun. We did some songs from Blue Velvet, lots of different things. We did Boogie Nights. We did the P.T. Anderson songs. We did the David Lynch songs, which we've been doing for a couple of years now. And then I saw sort of like came back and then – you know, went sort of out of business and did other things, and then everything kind of came crashing down in March. What were you doing other than you were doing lots of other music stuff and going around and doing stuff?
Yeah, I sort of revived my own band, which I hadn't been doing for years. Mm-hmm. I think we played a couple weeks before the quarantine happened, and aside from that, there actually wasn't, I didn't have a lot going on musically, just my own thing. Mm-hmm. I guess when all this happened, it wasn't like, it was just kind of business as usual, I guess, but mm-hmm. just not leaving the house and working from home. And I'm a homebody, so I'm here kind of all the time anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It's like, it is very strange because I think two ways of thinking about it. You know, some people are, most of the artists are kind of like, well, this is sort of like normal. Cause I think for me, it's very normal to sort of be in one place for a long time and not go out. Like, I tend to travel a lot though. Like, so even if I'm like traveling, I'm still sheltering in place no matter where I go.
Yeah.
So, but this is like a weird thing of not being able to kind of go anywhere if you're just stuck in one place.
It's weird, but it, you know, I guess one thing that I sort of liked about it is that it just took all the pressure off me to have to try to do all the things that come along with being in a band, touring and mm-hmm. and playing shows and just constantly having that machine keep moving or trying to keep the hamster wheel going all the time. And it's nice to be forced to have to stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't hate it. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that are not good about it, obviously, but...
And it's been good to make music, so you got to make a great song and a video at home.
Yeah, thank you.
That's exciting.
That was fun. Yeah, that was fun to do. And I think it was the same kind of thing. Like, it took all the pressure off for me once this happened to not have to worry about all of the follow-up and everything that comes along with putting music out. I just felt like, oh, well, I can just put this out and I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. And not having that in my head made it, I think, easier for me to write and to be more free about it. And
yeah, I see a lot of artists doing that right now too, like putting stuff out. And Phoebe Bridger, who's a singer-songwriter that I like, she was doing a world tour, but it was like, one stop was from her bedroom and one was from her kitchen and one was from her living room. So like the world was her house, but the different rooms were like the different countries of her world, which I thought was really good.
That's
so
great.
It's kind of like a great, like a little like the our environments, you know, we just do whatever we can, you know, with what we have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
People are still putting out music, even though we're not able like to tour and stuff, so that's good.
I'm enjoying it, and I'm enjoying seeing what other people are doing, and I'm ready for it to come back, obviously, but
yeah,
whatever is going on right now, I'm dealing with it. Just it's not the end of the world for my situation, because I haven't been actively touring for, it's probably been about 4 years. I did it for a long time in my band, and I don't know that I was just born with the constitution to just be a person that's just on the road all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the dream, is to be able to like not be on the road and just to stay in one place and be able to do that kind of stuff. Like the being on the road, I don't think anybody's cut out for it. I do love it, but it takes a lot out of me. You know,
it's
like,
hard. Yeah.
It's very hard. I mean, I think it's like, it's the one constant in my life, but it's the one thing that I know is incredibly exhausting. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly, I mean, it is rewarding, but it's so difficult. Like, and it also takes toll on your relationships, and it sort of helps if you're kind of a loner anyway.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah.
And now I have Lucia, so she's a good dog traveler, so she likes to go everywhere. So that's
she
good.
She seems very happy in her little pouch.
Yeah, she's really good in her little bag, and she doesn't mind going everywhere. And she'll like, if she's tired, she'll just fall asleep in the little bag.
Yeah.
And she'll just check out. Like, she doesn't have to be involved in every social interaction.
Sure.
So she'll just like fall asleep in the bag, and then she's fine in there, you know, and she doesn't really care what happens.
Yeah.
So I found like that's been cool. If I'm like in a relationship or something, then it's harder to leave. So if I don't have anybody to come home to, I'm happy to go out of town.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, there's so many parts of it that are so great, like traveling and seeing the world and, you know, having experiences you would not have if you were just staying at home. Mm-hmm. But the traveling is really taxing physically and emotionally. It's draining too. And just navigating different cities every day. And even the really basic stuff, like waking up and where am I getting my coffee? How soon can I get it? Like even very basic things like that this is okay. You know, I'm totally okay with this.
It's good. Yeah. The level of touring, it matters. Like, and the very basic things of like, how high is the pillow going to be? Because I have a short neck. So I have to like, every time a pillow is like even an inch higher, it's like a huge problem for my
neck. No, me too. I bring my own pillow.
That's good. That's smart.
Yeah.
Because I can never fall asleep because my neck, it's always like out of whack. Like it's very difficult. Like,
yes,
there was a period because I was always also on the road with a bunch of girls. This is years ago. Mm-hmm. So we would do like this kind of like internet dating, like roulette, where we would have like, we would turn on our locations and just like try to find like weird dudes. Just like, okay, we're going to fuck this guy. just like try to find like some weird dudes to come over.
Yeah.
And then take a bunch of Ambien and have them come over.
Sounds great.
Just like crazy stuff. And it's just funny like to think about now, but actually really like it's not sustainable.
I know.
But it's so fun. But it's definitely like now it's much more of a quiet. Now in my 50s, it's much a quieter time to be out on the road. But now it's definitely like just to be home. And I'm excited that you put out a single and put out a music video and stuff, and it's a good thing to do. I haven't had any sort of like desire or impetus to be creative at all. Like I haven't had any sort of
I barely have, and it's weird because I you know, I was just kind of sitting around for a couple weeks and not really knowing what to do. And some friends of mine over at Third Man Records were putting together this video show and they were looking for content. And it was like, I needed someone to tell me they needed something and I needed a deadline. And that was kind of all it took for me to, there hasn't really been much else motivating me artistically. So I just sat down and made one song. And usually when I write, I work on different little bits of different things at the same time. I'll have maybe a few songs going. But this one in particular, I said, I'm just going to focus on this and finish it and hand it in and not think too hard about it and just follow my gut instinct on this one.
That's great. Yeah. Did you record it all in your home studio? Did you do it all at house?
Yeah, I did it actually in the room I'm sitting in right now, which is it's a converted garage behind my house. That's a little, it's like a two-car garage that's turned into a recording studio. So usually I collaborate with my band members, but because this was early on in the quarantine, we weren't really able to do that. So Kelly, who I live with, who you may have met at a show.
Yes, yes. So he sang at the Lynch show.
He did. Yes. He did. So he was able to come in and play on some things. And I don't know, it was very laid back. It was fun to do.
So you guys played all and sang everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible that you guys could just do everything on your own, just at home.
It's crazy. This is something I've never really been able to do or had the luxury of, but Kelly's lived here for a long time and he puts out his own records where he plays every instrument on the album, produces it. He does everything. And that's something that is a little more foreign to me, but I've sort of learned from being in this atmosphere that I can try to get as much done as I can. And what I can't, you know, he'll just step in and help me with. And
oh, that's so great. What can you play? You can play anything guitars, right? Anything guitar, strings.
Yeah, that's guitar is my main instrument and, you know, bass I can play because I've just applied the guitar knowledge to the bass.
Yeah.
There's a lot of keyboards around here that I can play, but I'm not a classically trained piano player by any means. I can't sit down and do that whole thing, but I can play melodies and, you know, I'm a good, really good one finger piano player.
That's good. And then, so anything probably a synthesizer you could probably figure out.
Yeah. You know, on a kind of basic level, cannot drum. Kelly does that. And other than that, it's just like little, you know, machines I could tinker with, drum machines and pedals and just fun things I can plug in that make noises. And those are always really, you know, they're essentially toys.
So, yeah. And then that's all you need, really. Everything else you could probably just like overdub and then, you know, voice stuff. That's great.
It's all it is. So great. And it's nice to, you know, it's nice to be able to be in a situation. I mean, it's great to collaborate and I prefer collaborating and I love doing that. But in this particular situation where you didn't really have a lot of options, it was nice to just be in this room alone and, you know, get to try all these different things and just layer all these tracks. And
yeah, like I'm trying to play a little bit more. I'm trying to be I think trying to be more creative, and then I got a Moog, a grandmother, and then I was like so confused because I thought it was a piano.
Okay.
I thought it was like and then I'm like, no, it's not, it's like a synthesizer, and then it's like it's all patch cables.
Ugh.
And then you got to like put, and then I'm like, oh, and then then you have like this thing of like the cookbook basically is like you have the patch cables that you put the cables in and then it makes the sound. So then it's really strange, but it's basically
so
tubes and the keyboard is really just a way to sort of like direct you through the sounds, but the cables are what make the sounds really change. So
I've seen those, but I've never had anything like that.
It's so weird. Like I thought it was like a Mellotron, but it's really not. It's so bizarre. It's so dorky, but really, like I could see how you could get super into it if you were that kind of a mind. Like if you had that kind of capacity. I just really, I was like really mistaken.
Those are scary looking to me.
They're so scary. Some interesting business. I just like, I don't understand. I don't understand. Like I have an accordion too, and I'm like, I don't understand, because it's the bellows element of it. Anything that you have to push air through, I'm like, mm-mm.
It's hard. That is so cool. You're playing accordion.
It's hard. The bellows part of it is like, it really requires so much arm strength.
Yeah.
And it's the sevenths. The keys are one thing, but it's those like buttons.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I love watching people play the accordion. Yeah. Whichever the arm is that's kind of doing that in and out movement. Mm-hmm. It's just, I love it. It's beautiful.
It's really poetic, and it's a really pretty instrument. And the thing is that you could probably fake it pretty well if you got like two or three keys. You could probably do something almost like use it like a looping pedal.
Yeah. That's cool.
You know? Because you could probably do that. And, you know, there's a couple of things around that I have. I like an idiosyncratic instrument because then it's like, well, it's different enough where just the very appearance is theatrical, which takes away the need to be a virtuoso.
Totally. That's so, always a good thing. Yeah.
It's like, okay, the appearance of it, like, whether it's a melodica or something that's kind of like an oddity, which I think is enough to make it seem like, oh, this is kind of an interesting thing to look at. And so it makes it, well, it's kind of fun.
I love it. It's very inspiring that you're playing that. It's cool.
I saw a dog in your video. Where's your, do you have a dog?
That was my parents' dog, who has since passed away.
Oh my goodness.
I know. That's the wonderful Stoli, who once lived in my parents' house in Toronto. She was the best. She was a big, large golden retriever.
Oh.
And she was my bud.
Oh.
But you know, actually, speaking of dogs, I've started to really think about getting a dog.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a good thing. I mean, it's because it's just being like home is a nice feeling. It's just like so it's comforting to have an animal around. You know, it's mm-hmm. It's a very sweet feeling.
Yeah.
And then in San Francisco, it's also like a nice, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a nice city. It's a nice city to have dogs too.
So you used to live here, correct?
I grew up in, the Sunset on, 20th between Irving and Judah. So just off of the, N Judah nice. Line. And I went to the same high school as Mark.
Okay.
But not at the same time. And I met him when he was playing with Eitzel, Mark Eitzel.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
And a long time ago, like in the 80s, like a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And we went, he had come to LA with Mark because I had seen them at the, I want to say it was like Satellite or something.
Okay.
I took him to some party in like Hancock Park. Yeah, he was he was playing piano with a bunch of people. And it was like really like squirrel nut zippers. It was like at that era where everybody's like really squirrel nut zippers.
Yes. Like very, I know very, exactly like, what you're talking about. Yes.
Swing era, very period. Like it was like the 1930s, but it was like the 90s. But it was very like 80s, 90s, like... But everybody wanted to be like swing dancing. It was so dorky. So
I remember.
Dorky.
Yeah.
Why is it like that? Like, so like, why can't we just be in like our era?
I don't know. I do not know. That one was particularly irritating for some reason.
But he looks really good in that era. He's very good in like a period costume.
I could see that.
Because he's perfectly like that perfect like era, different era sort of look.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. I wasn't sure. I feel like he made out with my friend, but I can't remember.
Hmm.
I can't remember how I even got involved with the Red Room Orchestra. Maybe he asked me, or maybe somebody, no, I think somebody from Sketchfest asked me.
Yeah.
So, and then I came, and did the shows, and it's been so fun. I hope we can do them again.
Me too. Me
so fun.
Too.
I'm sure we will.
I hope so. I know we will. It's just a matter of when.
I know we will, but it's just so when did you have other shows before this whole
maybe, but I don't think anything was confirmed, or maybe there was stuff in the works, but
I think it was just all sort of in the air anyway, because it's sort of like, what's going to happen? Was nobody knew?
I don't think so. There's usually something that happens in the summer, but it didn't. I don't think we even got that far.
Yeah. I think because everybody was sort of like, we don't know what's going on with this corona, because the coronavirus was so kind of like, people were talking about it even in like February a little bit.
Yeah, it was very vague. I feel like I got the news, you know, I got the news kind of late. I remember a friend of mine was telling me that the hand sanitizer was completely sold out on Amazon. And that was the first time I thought, oh, whoa, maybe I'm not reading the news enough or something, because I don't think I had realized the level of seriousness that this was. But
yeah.
Then maybe within like 48 hours, everything had changed. Or, you know, that's what it felt like. It felt like it just happened overnight.
Yeah.
At least to me.
Yeah, it was. It was, seemed like it was like everything changed really fast. Mm-hmm. Like it was so fast.
I know. It'll be interesting to see what it's going to be like moving forward. I was just, Kelly and I were talking about the concept of backstage. It's like, will that even exist anymore? Will anyone even want people coming backstage at their own show anymore? And
who knows?
I don't know. We'll see. But I'm glad we were able to get those shows in, because they were very special.
And our band was so big. Like when we play, it's like, so our Red Room Orchestra shows are so big because there's like usually about 20 plus people. And it's a huge band. It's like always different and always varied. Lots mm-hmm. and lots and lots of different people. Really, everybody's great, and it's always really special. But it's so funny because it's like everybody really gets along, and it's always really fun because everybody's so good.
I know. It's such a blast. It's like summer camp or something.
It is. It's really easy too. Like there's no drama, and there's no like, it's just everybody just like, but it's kind of hard. It is kind of hard work, because you guys have to like learn so many songs.
Ugh,
and nuts. The songs are very difficult, actually.
Yes. Yes.
Because it goes from like classical music to jazz to experimental jazz to punk rock to, it's done in different styles, and there's horn sections, there's strings, there's covers, rock and roll, there's Iggy Pop, there's Bowie, but there's also Tubular Belt. I mean, it's
wild. It's a really
whistling.
Yeah, right. It's like boot camp, you know, if you still have a lot to learn as a musician, because mm-hmm. for me, when I kind of elbowed my way in and once I realized what I had signed up for, I kind of looked around the room and thought, should I be here? But maybe I should, or maybe I shouldn't, but I'm not going to let anyone know how I feel about it. And I'm just going to sort of act like I know what I'm doing and I can do it. But some of those guys can just kind of walk in the room and they can throw the sheet music down and they can just start playing it. But for me, with some of that stuff, I'd have to prepare for months on my own, but I was very, I kind of kept that to myself, so I just looked like I could roll in and just show up and play like everyone else. But, you know, everyone knew what was going on.
Oh, you're so good. You're so good.
Well, I just need to prepare.
Mm. Well, I think you're so good.
Oh, thanks, Margaret.
You're so good.
Thank you. By the way, speaking of the Red Room Orchestra, I wanted to show you the special outfit that I wore for you today.
Gorgeous!
You wore this, I think, maybe to the first gig that we did together.
Yes, yes.
It looked so great, and I was just in awe of it all night. And I went home, like, high off the gig, thinking, I got to get one of those.
Yes.
So I bought one, and I got it, and I put it in my closet, and I thought, I'm going to wait for, like, the perfect time to wear this. And
yes,
today might be the day. This is the day. I think I've owned this for, like, a good year.
Yeah.
And
it looks amazing.
Thank you. I was very excited to bust it out today. Thanks.
It looks so good on you. But, you know, you can wear it all the time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because, like, I haven't I haven't really busted it out in a regular situation. Like, I haven't worn it down to the bar.
Yeah, yeah. That is something you could wear anytime because it's kind of self-contained. It's really actually very handy and it's casual.
Yes.
It's an all-weather San Francisco outfit. So
it really is.
But in general, like with a Converse or like a flat, you could do it anytime.
I've got my sneakers on right now and I think I'm going to take this down for a spin to the farmer's market later.
The only time I don't like it is on a plane because it's hard to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I did notice that.
The toilet is small, so it's hard to get my arms out. And then I don't know where to put the top to go pee. It's a little confusing. It's a little bit confusing to deal with. But the other situations in my life, and I'm not going to the airport anyway, so it doesn't matter. But it's like a very, I love that you got it and it looks great on you. It's perfect.
Thank you. I was inspired to wear it today. I was excited. I do see some guitars behind you and a little keyboard.
Oh, that is the melodica. And there's a tiny little orange amp there. And then I have a Jerry Jones electric sitar.
Nice.
That is, I just had a restrung, which is good. And then I have a Jerry Jones 12 string, which I like the Jerry Jones guitars. They're like the fake Dan Electros. I think he worked for Dan Electro and then he designed them and then he left Dan Electro and then he made his own. So he just, I think he just died, but he's like a luthier from Nashville.
Nice.
But he was cool. And then I got a Griffin, which is like a 12 string, sort of a mandolin and a short scale guitar, but it's very high. It's like, I think it's tuned in like E or something. Hmm. I wrote a song where I can play both, but I'm trying to find an electric version of that. And I think that's really hard to do, to find an electric.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before, I don't think. That's pretty cool.
I found it because in Ed Gruen in Nashville, this luthier died. And so they had... they sold off his like collection of stuff he made, and that was one of the things that he made. And so I have never seen it again.
Wow!
And so I'm like, oh, I don't know. And I guess you could have it made, but it's sort of that's kind of expensive.
Well, maybe a little. No, it was before the quarantine happened because I started tinkering with it late last year. But I started trying to teach myself how to build guitar pedals, or at least understanding how to put those together. They're very simple. It's sometimes in some of those old pedals, there's like five electronic components. There's nothing in there. So
yeah,
that was actually one thing that I was doing when this started was like starting to tinker with pedals a little bit or getting in there. But then I stopped everything else. It just seemed like, oh, here's a project I'll start. And then it's like 2 weeks later. Yeah. Move on to something else.
They're like an area of interest. Like pedals are something that I never really got into, but some people get really involved. Like the Edge has like his whole thing of pedals and.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I was very late in the game to that stuff. And I don't think I have the enthusiasm that some people do about guitar effects in general, but I'm kind of fascinated by how simply they were made in the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's cool how much it can change the sound of something and then how much you associate the sound of something with a certain track and that it only takes that tiny thing to really make that sort of the signifier of like the rock and roll song that we love so much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool.
That's sort of what's so fascinating about rock and roll. But I find there's so much limitless potential in just the bare sound of a guitar. And the variants that we even get within one instrument without any kind of pedals and without any, you know, that's always like really interesting. Or even in the age of a string, you know, there's a lot of infinite possibilities there.
It's true, yeah.
So much to dork out on. A lot.
I know.
Well, I hope that I get to see you again soon. And where can people find you and your music and all of the things about you on the internets?
Well, there we have a website, which is dirtyghost.com. And I think there's links up there to, I know our new video's up there. You can find our new single on Bandcamp. So just Bandcamp / Dirty Ghosts, I think. I don't know. I guess if you go into Bandcamp and just search for Dirty Ghosts, it'll show up. Oh, sorry. That was really annoying. But I think those are probably the only two links that I know of that you can find everything.
Okay. Oh, and, okay. And then on Instagram, if you're on Insta.
Oh, yeah. Instagram, Dirty Ghosts, and Facebook as well.
Cool.
So, yeah. Just search for our name. We're up there somewhere.
Cool. Well, thank you, Allison. And then, we'll do our Red Room Orchestra shows again someday.
I hope so.
After this is over, we will do them again.
Definitely.
Yes.
Nice to see you, Margaret.
I'm so glad to see you. And check out Strange Weather. It's so great. And the video is really awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Melissa Stetton and original score by Garrison Starr.
Taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart. Coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark. Yeah, I'm coming out of the dark.
An Erios original.
Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.